Truly, in season one, she was just like, I can't be in the locker room. And now she's just like, I fantasize about naked showering with Reggie. And I'm like, what is happening? Okay. Hello and welcome to our Riverdale podcast, brought to you by the Aficionados Podcast Network. My name is Robin Jeffrey. I'm a 28-year-old actor and artist. I like brooding anti-heroes, feminist agendas, and I remember way too many details that no one else cares about. You can follow me personally at Robin E. Jeffrey pretty much everywhere. And our fun fact for this episode is there an author that you have read all of their novels, like their entire bibliography? I would say, like, when I was trying to think of something, I thought there are quite a few authors where I'm very close, or like I have started making an effort to do so. But I know for a fact that I have read every single John Green novel.
Ooh, like all of them?
Like all of them, because I've been a fan of the Green Brothers since 2010. So they've been a real constant in my life for 13 years.
Aww.
So if you guys are familiar with the news that has happened regarding them, that was a big blow to me.
Oh, I bet.
But yeah, and so speaking of, I've also read all of Hank's novels, but he's only put out two, so that doesn't feel like as much of a a brag.
Hey, it you counts. Know? But it counts.
Yeah. But I have read every John Green novel, which is like 6 or 7, I think. So
nice.
That counts. And as you guys have noticed, Blanche is here. Brittany was unexpectedly, like, last minute, unable to be on this podcast. So as always, Blanche is our absolute hero and has pulled up.
Of course.
To talk about Riverdale, which is the best.
I always love talking about Riverdale.
So Rick, who are you?
Oh, right. I'm Blanche. I'm guest hosting for this episode. I'm a 22-year-old pet caretaker from Massachusetts, and media consumption is my only hobby. And an author whose entire bibliography I've read. I do not have one, but I have kept up with every single Diary of a Wimpy Kid book that's ever been released, including...
Respect. How many of that is that?
Oh, God. I think there's like 20 now. Like, they release a new one every year.
Yeah.
Including the Rowley ones. I've read those too. So I'm going to go with Jeff Kinney, who writes those. And Jeff, if you're listening, hello, fellow masshole. And also, I'm very excited for the new one to come out this fall.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi.
Hope you're enjoying our Riverdale podcast.
Today we have words to say about episode 709 of Riverdale, Betty and Veronica Double Digest.
I absolutely love this title.
Me too.
It made me so happy. Oh, also our step-by-step notes for the season were written by you, so thank you.
Of course.
You're the best. And okay, always. So the title, this is literally like what the larger comic collections are called. A double digest is basically a larger version of the regular digest publication line. So the regular digests were 128 pages and the double digests were 256 pages, which is like times two, so that's why it's called a double digest.
They're always like in the grocery store checkout line, the Betty and Veronica ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
It's awesome.
And you guys, I had a sore throat all day today, so I'm gonna try my best.
But, you got this.
But what's the word? Bear with me. Going into thoughts from listeners, we have one, and then two of them that are just me, because I thought of different things that while I was listening to like the previous podcast or whatever. But so we got a tweet from Jonathan, and he said, in Riverdale 707, it was Riverdale Grandstand's 50th episode, which means this established TV show has only been airing for 10 weeks.
Oh my God.
Because it's every weekday. And I'm like, that's such a damn good point.
That's a long time, though.
Hal is like, this show is my pride and joy.
Shut up, Hal. Yeah.
The next thing that I thought of was that they said that they're going to name Jughead Jugular. They're going to write Jughead Jugular Jones. And then we saw him, like, on the actual cover, and it didn't say Jugular.
Oh, it just said Jughead Jones?
Just said Jughead Jones.
Oh my God.
So they didn't even do that. They were like, we're going to say that because so that the title of the episode works. And then they didn't go through with it at all.
That's funny.
And we'll talk about this a little bit this episode, but I realized that Brad's death being investigated by Keller, like we had wondered, does he live in Riverdale? Like how, like what are the odds that Jughead's like my favorite author and he like literally lives in your town? You've never like, you know, bumped into him at the grocery store? Okay. But I realized that it being investigated by Keller means that he does officially live in Riverdale. Like that tells us that he does. So yeah.
Okay. Sure.
So yeah. All right, Blanche, toot or boot?
I'm definitely gonna have to go with toot. Like, You know I love all the Alice heavy episodes, but I also love not having Uncle Frank, and I love
that's true. He was not in the episode.
Yes, it was awesome, and I also love that it was very female centric.
Yeah, yeah, that was very fun.
Yeah,
I think I'm gonna give this episode I'm gonna give it a toot. It's gonna be like closer to the Newt side of toot, I think.
Ooh, okay.
I didn't really have that many like big opinions about it. Like, it was sort of just like a funsy one, and that's okay, you know.
Yeah,
that's nice. Like, I didn't hate it, which I love.
that's the bar for Riverdale sometimes.
Yeah But like you said in your notes, like, do you want to talk about how dialogue heavy this episode is?
Yeah, I was just gonna apologize to everyone because the scene summaries are a little bit clunky because the episodes have been really dialogue heavy lately.
Yeah, and especially this episode I found, and so, like, I honestly, I don't think I had, like, that many things to say, actually, you know?
Yeah.
I definitely do have notes and things to talk about, but I can't say that I have that many things to say.
Right.
Because they mostly said them all.
Exactly.
You know? So yeah. So you guys, basically there was a Betty storyline and a Veronica storyline, which is what we assumed, and I loved it. Yes. But there's also like this little tiny Jughead storyline that sort of bookends the episode. So weirdly enough, we're gonna like finish the episode right at the beginning here.
Oh, I just put, did you want to do Jughead right at the beginning, or did you want to do...
Yes, yeah, that's totally fine.
Or did you want to do Jughead first and then again at the end once we sandwich Betty, Veronica in the middle? Whatever you prefer.
No, let's do it. Let's just get it over with now, I feel like.
Sure, okay. So.
Yeah, Jughead, like, showed up and had his, like, beginning bit and his ending bit, and then, like, showed up in both Veronica and Betty's storylines to, like, be Wikipedia, since they don't have Wikipedia in the 50s. So I loved that for him, that he's like, oh, I'm around. I'm just stuck in this booth.
I'm just sad.
Reading these books. Yeah.
So, we start off, and Jughead is sad. And actually, he's in mourning. For the past few days, he's been sitting alone at Pops, drinking milkshakes and rereading Brad's old novels.
He's real sad about his father figure.
Mm.
And some of the books that I saw were November County, which we knew about, right. Enter the Dark, Spring Leaf, and Dire Territory.
Okay.
Which I, like, literally, I spent, I want to say, like, not a more than zero amount of minutes, like, looking at Ray Bradbury's bibliography. Mm-hmm. And, like, I couldn't figure out what these other ones were a reference to, unless I, like, missed it because I was going pretty fast. Like, I feel like Spring Leaf is, like, how is that not called, like, Summer Tree or, like, something, you know? Like, it feels like it's referencing something. Enter the Dark, like Exit the Light or something, you know? But I couldn't figure out what they were referencing.
Who knows?
So if anyone knows, let me know. I feel like I went through that big bibliography pretty quickly because it was so large. So
yeah,
I don't know.
That's a lot. It makes me so sad that he has to go through all this by himself.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah,
I know, again, surprise shocker here, I'm bringing up Gladys and FP, but just from like from like a relatable standpoint this time. Like, I've dealt with a lot of death in my life, and I genuinely don't know what I would have done if I didn't have my parents to lean on, and Jughead has no one.
Like, who's taking care of Hot Dog while you're in this booth for several days? Like, I gain a lot of solace from getting to snuggle my puppy, and you're not...
Exactly.
You're not taking advantage of this.
Literally, I've only had my dog for a couple months, but, like, he has been, like, the most amazing little buddy for when I'm sad.
Truly. The only other thing I had about this scene was that, like, when he sort of talks about time slowing down, and you see that shot of a clock, it, like, has that time slowing down sound, which reminded me of Stranger Things. Like, I thought it sounded just like it, and they were showing a clock, and we always heard that sound when we saw the grandfather clock in Stranger Things 4.
Right.
So, yeah, if, I, like, yeah.
What if Vecna is the milkman?
Probably that.
So this is the last scene in the episode. Jughead finishes rereading the last of Brad's novels. Pop asks if he wants another milkshake, but he declines and asks for the check. He tells him that in his rereads, he has noticed some recurring themes. Time passes and life moves on. He says he's not done mourning, but he's done wallowing, and Brad would want him to move on. As Jughead's about to clean up and leave, Tom Keller walks in and tells him they need his help to solve the case on Brad's death.
Honestly, slay. And, like, then they, like, they launched into this the most incredible trailer ever. Like, it's, like, gotta be my favorite trailer of the season so far.
I'm so excited to see Tabitha next episode.
Yeah.
Like, it just gives us like a little taste of how she would have helped solve Jason Blossom's murder if she was in season one. I just love that.
Yeah. I'm like, wait, did Jug read every single one of his books? And I think he did. Like, he's literally out here reading the entire thing. And I feel like...
That's insane.
I know that he gets, like, milkshakes and stuff, but I feel like reading at a table isn't, like, nearly as comfy as, like, reading on a couch or, like, your fancy bed that Veronica got you, you know?
Yeah! With your puppy.
I don't know. With your puppy, exactly.
Mm. Also, do you think that he told Tabitha about what's going on?
About Brad?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I guess, no. Actually, no. I changed my mind, because if he did, I think she'd be there.
Well, maybe she's babysitting Hot Dog.
Yeah, that's true. He's like, here's how you can help me. I want to sit in Pops for a really long time.
And she would. She would do it.
Yeah.
I adore Tabitha.
I liked the part where, you know, Jughead was like, and here's a theme that I found in these books. And Pop is like, okay. But he's like talking about how, like, time passes. And in the Veronica storyline, Dilton says that time is the fourth dimension. And so I like how... if time really is the fourth dimension of horror.
It is. And
so I thought that was kind of cool.
Tabitha is a time traveler.
Yeah, right.
It's all connected, guys.
I was like, before Keller came in, I was like, does Jughead really believe that he killed himself? Like, I don't know. And then I was like, oh my gosh, Jughead is gonna like look in the books and like find a clue or something. I was disappointed that like Keller came in and was like, Jughead, we were wrong, or like whatever, you know? I was just like, no, Jughead should have found a clue. That would have been way more fun.
Right, yeah. Maybe, I don't know.
And then Keller's like, we're investigating it and you need to help us solve it. And I'm like, what's the mystery if it was ruled a suicide, though? Like, I know it wasn't a suicide.
Right, but...
But, like, if it was ruled a suicide, what are you investigating?
Maybe the fact that it might not be a suicide is, like, a secret.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true, because Keller's just like, oh, he definitely killed himself.
Yeah.
Okay, sure.
Just in case that anyone was listening.
Yeah, I just didn't want Jughead snooping.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. Well, that's a little Jughead storyline. Wahoo!
Love to see my boy.
Yep.
Do you want to do Veronica next?
Let's do Veronica.
Okay, awesome. At school in the hallway, Veronica, Clay, and Gay Kevin are handing out free tickets to the James Dean double feature that she's hosting at the Babylonium. Cheryl, since she's the president of the James Dean fan club, skeptically approaches Veronica. She's been waiting to see East of Eden for months, but why should she see it there if there are bigger theaters? Ronnie says, because they can have free passes. Just so long as she spreads the words about it. Don't worry about the Bulldogs, though. She'll handle that. Smirk emoji.
Classic.
Cheryl agrees and leaves. Gay Kevin asks Ronnie if it's counterproductive to give away free tickets, but she tells him that most of their income will come from the snacks. Kevin Clay are also onto her about crushing on Reggie.
Yeah. I just want to first of all say that, like, the, like, font of seeing Betty at the beginning of Betty's storyline and Veronica in big letters at the beginning of Veronica's storyline made me so happy.
Yeah.
Because, like, that's them. That's the font.
It was so cute.
It was so nice to see that. I really thought that they were going to do, like, the commercial thing, because, like, Betty's thing was the first act and then Veronica had the entire second act. So I sort of expected them to keep going back and forth, but yeah. It's okay that they, you know, sort of interchanged after that.
I didn't mind that it was all mixed together.
The only other thing I had about this scene was that I totally forgot that Cheryl loves James Dean and was like part of his fan club because I was in 701, so.
But if she's supposedly such a stan and there are theaters nearby showing his new movie, why hasn't she seen it yet?
She's like, listen, I have a girlfriend and then I have Vixens and I have Riverdale Grandstand and I have, like, she got a lot going on. And she's the president or whatever. I'm like, when were you going to see it?
Of the James Dean fan club. So
yeah.
Why hasn't she seen it?
But like president of the school?
Oh, true. Think, right? Like yeah. Student body president.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. I'm just saying I take my media a little bit more seriously than her.
No, you're totally. I completely agree.
Yeah.
Like, I have audiobooks and I have podcasts, but as soon as, like, a new episode of, like, this one specific podcast comes out, I'm just like, throw everything else away.
Exactly.
This is the most important thing. If I don't get if I don't know what happens this episode, I can't go on Twitter today.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Also, wasn't Veronica, like, friends with James Dean and he just died?
Yeah.
I feel like if it's one thing if she's genuinely putting this together to honor him, but it does not seem like that's what she's doing.
No, you're totally right. And, like, later she's just... later she's like, I bet in the back of her mind, she's just like, man, I knew him and everything. Like, if he wasn't dead, I could have invited him and made more money.
She's insane.
Right?
But that's definitely what she was thinking.
Yes.
It's all about the cash with Veronica.
Yep.
Veronica is in the boys' locker room, sticking movie passes into everyone's lockers. The boys return from practice to find her, and Fangs is the first to say hi. Ronnie steps up to Reggie and invites him personally, saying he can sit right next to her. She then compares him to James Dean because they both played basketball. So
he's gonna sit next to you in what seat? You're not even seated. It's a full house. What are you gonna do, man?
Literally.
She like sits on the steps. And then she has to yell at her own self about a fire violation.
She also calls him Jimmy Dean in this scene, and I'm embarrassed to admit that I was about to Google who that was, and then I realized she's talking about James Dean.
Yeah, and Cheryl calls him Jimmy later, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
The only other thing that I had was that I was like, first of all, Veronica, are you allowed to be in here? But it reminded me of, like, the beginning of season one when she just sort of, like, walked in.
Yeah, and Betty was, like, covering her eyes.
Do you remember that? And then Betty, like, was, like, hiding her eyes. Yeah. It reminded me of that.
I love it.
I love that. I remember, like, specifically feeling, like, so in tune with Betty in that scene. I remember being like, Betty's my best friend. She gets it.
Oh, she does.
And now Betty's just like, I have fantasies about... like, okay.
Betty's the horniest person on the planet.
Truly. In season one, she was just like, I can't be in the locker room. And now she's just like, I fantasize about naked showering with Reggie. I'm like, what is happening? Okay.
So, it's double feature time at the Babylonium. They're showing Rebel Without a Cause and East of Eden. Veronica charges Reggie for a popcorn and says it'll be 25 cents. Or he could take her out on a date for a milkshake. He takes her up on the date idea, but pays anyway. He says he'll meet her there after the show. Almost immediately after this, Gay Kevin rushes down the stairs and tells her there's a situation with Clay in the projection booth. When I tell you...
Yep. Okay, so... Uh-huh.
I thought the milkman got Clay. I was so scared.
Oh, no. When me and Meta were watching it, Meta was just like, why does Kevin have such Disney Prince voice on? Like, he's sort of like, Veronica! It was very Heathers, actually.
It's the...
Veronica!
Oh my god, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just like the musical actor in Casey Cott.
Exactly. A lot of my notes for this storyline is just like Wikipedia articles of the various movies they're talking about. Ooh. So the two movies that they are playing tonight, Rebel Without a Cause, was a 1955 American coming-of-age drama film about emotionally confused suburban middle-class teenagers. It offered both social commentary and an alternative to previous films depicting delinquents in urban slum environments.
Okay.
And then they're also playing East of Eden, which also came out in 1955, so James Dean was, like, real busy in 1954 or something.
I guess so.
It's a American... period drama film loosely based on the fourth and final part of the 1952 novel of the same name by John Steinbeck. It stars James Dean as a wayward young man who, while seeking his own identity, vies for the affection of his deeply religious father against his favored brother, thus retelling the story of Cain and Abel. Which is really cool. And I'm just like, that's why it's called East of Eden, because it's like a biblical type story. And I think that's interesting that it's like just slightly off of like the Garden of Eden, which is supposed to be like a heaven type place, you know? So it's like not quite heaven, which I think is cool.
Ooh, that's cool.
I've never seen the film, but like that's the insight I got.
Neither have I. I've never seen a James Dean movie, unfortunately. But
they all seem kind of cool though.
Yeah. Was I think I'm wrong about this, but was Rebel Without a Cause the movie they were watching at the drive-in in 104? Or was that?
That sounds familiar.
I think it was something else, but I think it was a James Dean movie.
Like, it was probably a double feature as well.
Maybe.
The picture show? Picture show? Last picture show.
The last picture show.
Like I said a couple episodes ago, there are some episodes of this show that I'm like, oh yeah, that episode, which was titled This and This Happened. And there are some episodes where I'm like, no idea. Couldn't tell you. Maybe I could tell you what season it was in, but I don't know.
Anything past season 3, I'm like, I have no idea. Are you also looking this up?
Yep.
I'm on RiverdaleFandom.com.
That's where I am too. I'm like on trying to find on the Twilight Drive-In, attendees, moviegoers, but tell me what they play. That's what I want to know.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Do you remember when they renamed it the Starlight?
Yeah.
Look at that. This is what it says in the trivia for the Twilight Drive-In. It says, Twilight Drive-In was incorrectly named as the Starlight Drive-In on one of Riverdale's one-shot comics.
Oh.
It was an Easter egg.
Interesting. Okay.
Oh, you were completely right. The last film screened was 1955 drama film Rebel Without a Cause.
I was right.
Yep, you were right.
Okay.
There it is. Hey, we learned like two things.
Yeah.
Just Googling that. That was worth it. I loved the moment where Reggie's like, you just keep on shooting. And Veronica says, you keep passing me the ball. That was definitely one of the options for a favorite line award for me. I thought that was so cute. And I'm happy that Reggie finally fell for it and finally is like into Veronica. But like, I'm so mad at Veronica for how she, like, doesn't...
I know.
Prioritize him at all. And I'm just like, oh, man, the mixed signals this kid must be getting.
Literally. I think...
He's like, wait, do you like me or not?
I think he knows that she likes him, but he's just, like, he's sick of not being treated like a priority. Like, he's an afterthought, and he doesn't... He thinks he deserves better. And he does.
Yeah. Well, like, he's so understanding after this part where he's like, oh, you're so busy, that's okay. But then when she says, come back tomorrow and yes, or like, I think she says, and we'll see, but like, yeah. It's basically like, come back. And then he comes back and she doesn't do anything, then like...
I know, and he brings her flowers.
Good for him for leaving.
Yeah.
He deserved better in that moment.
He definitely did.
Yeah.
I also wrote down, oh, to buy a popcorn for a quarter.
Truly.
They go upstairs to find Clay holding the film of the print, and he says it's unusable because it's overexposed. He says all of them are like that.
The only thing I have about this is, like, why didn't you check the print before literally now?
Yeah!
Like, are you kidding? Like, I know that it's, like, it's a narrative! It's a story! It has to happen so that this happens! But I'm also like, that's just bad business, Veronica.
Literally!
That's why the guy later is like, you're so green! And she's like, excuse me? And I'm like, yeah, you don't check your prints for 3 seconds before you're gonna play them. But I also feel like that's kind of on Clay if he's the projector guy! You know?
Yeah, but Veronica should have told him to do it.
Yes, correct.
I think if I owned a movie theater, I would be checking that stuff, like, the second it came in the mail.
Absolutely.
Veronica walks to the front of the completely packed and impatient theater and welcomes everyone. She explains the situation. The audience is pissed, and Cheryl and Fangs specifically. Cheryl demands a refund, and the crowd yells in agreement. Ronnie reminds her that these tickets were free, but then they demand a refund for their snacks. She offers vouchers for a free snack, but nobody's into that idea, so she obliges. But even then, they continue to throw food at her.
Yeah.
Make
your point. I completely agree with you.
Okay, so not to defend my favorite little capitalist here, but I am on Veronica's side 100%. I said it's not like there was anything wrong with the food they bought. Like, they could literally just save it for a snack at home later. And vouchers for next time seem more than fair. As someone who loves the DoorDash credit system, I'm with Ronnie.
Yeah.
And they're so rude about it, too. Audiences like this are so real nowadays, and they're the reason why I barely go to movie theaters anymore.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. Veronica is like, that makes total sense. I mean, like, she's in the wrong for not checking her stuff, like, right... until right before the movie.
Yeah.
But, like...
She doesn't deserve to have...
She definitely shouldn't owe them... She just, like, lost a bunch of popcorn and a bunch of snacks. Like...
Yeah.
It's like they were stolen from her, you know?
And she doesn't deserve to have food thrown at her, like...
Yeah.
Fangs is such a little bitch this episode.
Yeah. Like, my main thing was I was just like, you know what that means? Like, I kind of genuinely, you know, knowing Kevin works for them, I was sort of just like, Kevin, now's your moment. Recreate the entire film theater. Hello?
I would have loved that.
I sort of thought they were going to do like a little show. I don't know.
That would have been so funny.
But like my favorite part of this scene was like Midge's face when Veronica said vouchers. Midge was like, what? Her face was like, ew, no. And Fangs, of course, is like, we don't want your vouchers. You're stupid. And then Cheryl screams. It's like Jimmy Dean died all over again.
Oh my god. That's awful.
And I'm like, I think that's a little dramatic. I'm gonna be honest.
That's dramatic. And also, like, I know Veronica's, like, not really thinking about that. But it's kind of insensitive. Because Cheryl knows that Veronica knew him.
Yeah. She's like, I re-killed James Dean. Ouch.
So after Veronica refunds everyone for their snacks, Reggie approaches the concession stand. She apologizes to him, but asks if they can do a rain check for their date, because her business is currently about to go underwater. He understands and is very sweet about it.
He totally is understanding. It's great. Meta made the point that she was like, they should run the business together, like the old days. They should run the Babylonium together. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's genius.
Yeah.
Except, like, this Reggie that we have right now would be really bad at that, and I would have no idea how to do that, because that's not the type of character he is anymore. But yeah. I thought that would have been really cute.
I want so badly for Reggie to open up, too. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure he has more so to Archie, but I just want him to find more people that he can be his goofy himbo self around. Mm-hmm. The next day, Ronnie calls the company that sent them the films. The man on the other line apologizes but offers no solution. He says he wants the people in Riverdale to see the movie, but there are no prints he can ship to her. Ronnie asks why it's her problem that he sent her a defective product, but he rudely interrupts her and says that now that she owns the theater, it's always going to be her problem. He hangs up to go have lunch with Monty Clift.
Okay, then. So I was like, why is this guy so important? You know, she says Mr. Roth. He has a name. We get to see his face. Usually we would just, like, hear the other side of the phone. Like, he has a thing that says Peter Roth. So I was like, who is this Peter Roth man? Who is playing Peter Roth? Get this. Peter Roth is playing himself.
Oh, that's actually him?
So Peter Roth is, like, that's actually Peter Roth.
I knew he was named after a writer, but I didn't know that he was playing himself.
So as far as I can tell, there wasn't a picture of him on the Wikipedia. I'm pretty sure this is the same guy, but Peter Roth was born in 1950, so actually he would sort of only be 5 years old, actually. But he was an American television producer who served as the chairman and chief executive officer of Warner Brothers television studios starting in 1999. In 2020, it was announced that he would leave the studio in 2021. So, I don't know, now he's just vibing. I don't really know why he's here, especially because I found this. In October of 2021, Batwoman star Ruby Rose cited Roth's behavior on set and treatment of her as part of what she claimed was an abusive and dangerous working environment on the production. Was Batwoman not a CW show? Like, why is this man here? If this is the same dude?
No, it was. Like, they fire him after Ruby Rose said that because she was only in the first season of Batwoman.
I think that Ruby Rose, like, specifically, like, left, like, that because of him?
Because of him?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, but he's still working on that show.
Yeah, I guess. Oh, but God. It says he would leave the studio in 2021. So I wonder if she left and then he, like, resigned or something. Because this was in October of 2021.
That's insane.
But it was announced in 2020 that he was leaving. So I'm not sure.
Ugh, gross.
I'm pretty sure this is the same guy, but also, like, he has an IMDb page, and then when I went on the Riverdale to go and find him, it was a different IMDb page for the Riverdale guy, but I don't know if it just wasn't set up or, like, what? I don't know, but I'm pretty sure this is the same guy.
I'm pretty sure it is, considering that Riverdale is, like, owned by Warner Brothers.
Yeah. The only other thing I had was that, like, he's like, you would know that if you weren't so green, but I was like, yeah, you'd know that if you weren't a full-on teenager.
Literally.
Like, shouldn't you be doing homework? What are you doing?
Does she still go to school?
I mean, yeah, she, like, has a commercial done at school and everything. She, like, gave them the...
Oh, yeah.
We never see her in class, though.
She just doesn't go to class. She just hangs around in the hallways.
Gets people to, like, sign up to her business ventures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, next. Clay is astounded at how such a major studio is this unhelpful. Veronica says they're not the only studio, and we cut to a montage of her, Gay Kevin, and Clay calling all the rest of them, one of them possibly being Nick St. Clair.
Okay, now that you say that, holy crap, I did not put that together, but she does say Nikki, doesn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was upsetting. I'm happy that we don't have to deal with that character, though.
Look at him, yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, he'd also be a teen, right? So.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Is he, like, also a business owner, though?
Maybe. I don't know. Honestly, I don't care to know much about him.
Yeah, me neither.
But what he's up to, you know?
I think we've really beaten the Nick St. Clair horse to death.
Yes, truly.
But every other studio is just as unhelpful. Finally, Ronnie gets through to someone who reveals he's not doing business with her because he's trying to get into business with her parents. She complains to the boys that her parents are probably the whole reason for this mess, and all they want is to see her fail. It's not looking good, but Clay suggests that they try calling independent studios who aren't as fancy, but don't play by the same rules.
Really smart from Clay. Really smart.
Yeah.
Here's a bunch more Wikipedia articles on movies that she talks about.
Ooh.
Oklahoma, I'm sure we're all familiar, but it's a 1955 American musical film based on the 1943 musical of the same name by Rodgers and Hammerstein. It's set in Oklahoma Territory. It tells the story of farm girl Lori Williams and her courtship by two rival suitors, cowboy Curly McLean and the sinister and frightening farmhand Judd Fry. Then she also talks about To Catch a Thief. It is a 1955 American romantic thriller film directed by Alfred Hitchcock. The film stars Cary Grant as a retired cat burglar who has to save his reformed reputation by catching an imposter preying on the wealthy tourists, including the daughter of a wealthy widow played by Grace Kelly of the French Riviera. So that honestly sounds kind of cool.
Yeah.
And then we have The Night of the Hunter, which also came out in 1955, an American film noir thriller. The plot involves a serial killer who poses as a preacher and well, that freaks me out about the Betty storyline, the fact that the preacher was here.
I don't like that.
Who poses as a preacher and charms an unsuspecting widow to get his hands on $10,000 in stolen bank loot hidden by her executed husband. The novel and film draw on the true story of Harry Powers, who was hanged in 1932 for the murder of two widows and three children in Clarksburg, West Virginia.
Jesus!
Spooky.
I would watch that.
Yeah, it sounds cool too. The other thing.
Your next note?
Well, she says, a B-movie? A B-movie? And I went, you want the B-movie? What do you want the B-movie for? Just saying. I mean, it sounded like she wanted the B-movie.
I would go see the B-movie of the Babylonium.
Me too. I can't say that I've actually ever seen the B-movie all the way through, but I would if it was in the Babylonium.
Oh my god, Robin. Should that be our next movie night?
I don't think so.
No, man. You have to.
I'll think about it.
You gotta watch the B-movie. It's Jerry Seinfeld's best.
Oh boy.
His best.
I don't know if he would appreciate you saying that, but...
I don't care.
Okay.
Jughead is still at Pops reading Brad's old books. Veronica approaches him and asks if he's ever heard of the movie The Crawling Eye. He says yes. It came out a few years ago. He liked the monster, and Brad liked it too.
Oh, Brad! No. He's like, oh, my boy. My best friend also liked it.
Veronica's like, I don't care. Yeah. Veronica explains that this is the only movie she could get a hold of from an independent studio. Jughead suggests that she does what director and producer William Castle did, make movies in 4D-ish. He explains that for his movie The Tingler, Castle put buzzers under the seats in the audience, and when the monster came on screen, they would buzz and shock them. Ronnie thinks that this is a great idea and says that she can sell the gimmick and not the movie.
It was very cool that they sort of did foreshadowing, because we talked about this earlier this season, because Ethel talked about going to The Tingler.
Oh yeah!
And yeah, so like we had already talked about it, which I thought was pretty cool.
That's fun.
And okay, so The Crawling Eye.
I watched it.
It was originally... You did?
I did. Did you see my Letterboxd review?
Like right after the episode came out? No, I have to go look right now. Okay, you guys, I'm going to do a dramatic reading of the Letterboxd review.
Amazing.
The
intro
for The Crawling Eye. Like my buddy Jughead said, the monster was cool.
It was.
2 stars.
I didn't love it, but the monster was cool.
It says 1958, though.
I know!
What?
I think they just got that wrong.
Okay. Okay, so basically, it's cool. So it was originally released in the UK, and it was called The Trollenberg Terror.
Yes.
When it was released in the UK, but then in the US, it was released as The Crawling Eye. The storyline concerns United Nations troubleshooter Alan Brooks, later joined by journalist Philip Truscott, investigating unusual accidents occurring in the area of a resort hotel on the fictional Mount Trollenberg in Switzerland. Brooks suspects that these deaths are related to a series of similar incidents which occurred 3 years earlier in the Andes Mountains, which involved an unexplained radioactive mist and an odd cloud formation believed by locals to be inhabited.
Ooh.
It definitely does sound pretty cool.
I thought it would have been cooler. We only saw the monster for like a couple seconds at the end, which I was disappointed by.
Yeah.
Also, what are your thoughts on 4D?
I can't say. Honestly, dude, I don't even care for 3D. It gives me...
I said the same thing!
It gives me a headache.
Yeah, it makes me dizzy.
And like, yeah, so I prefer to just, you know, be comfortably removed from my movies, you know? I'm re-listening, well, I'm re-reading The Hunger Games via audiobook right now, and I'm like, if I go to see the Hunger Games movie, I'm not out here trying to get arrows, like, shot at my own face, you know? So, like, I guess it depends on the movie. Like, if it was sort of, like, a Soarin' Over the World, Soarin' Over California type thing, where it was just, like, a rom-com, like, I'd totally be down, but they don't make 4D movies for, like, fun movies like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, movies where it's just, like, oh my gosh, can you smell the French Parisian bread in the air? Like, I would love to do that, but I'm not out here trying to get, like, in, like, there's some, like, Disney World rides where you go in and then, like, there's, like, air on your feet when they say that rats are going by. I'm like, I'm not trying to do that.
Yeah.
That's not a life I'm trying to lead.
Exactly. The last time I saw a 4D movie was at this dinosaur exhibit in Mystic, and it was, like, 20 minutes long, and I could not stand it. A dinosaur sneezed on me. It was gross.
Like, I'll take it when I'm, like, on a ride, and then, like, it's, like, one of those ones, like, the Spider-Man ride at Universal.
Oh, yeah.
And then it sort of, like, sprays on you at some point. Like, that, whatever, I'm on a ride, but I'm not trying to do that for 2 hours.
Right.
You know?
I think, in theory, it's a cool concept, but, like, as someone with a lot of sensory issues, it's not for me.
Yeah. And, since I already talked about the Green Brothers earlier, several years ago, Hank invented the 2D glasses, and his story was that, like, he called up the people who make 3D glasses, and he was like, hey, can you, because, like, basically the two lenses in 3D glasses are different, which is what makes it 3D. And so he called the people, and he said, can you make glasses where they're both the same? And they said, yeah, but then the 3D effect would be gone. And Hank went, yes, wonderful. I will order 1,000 of them. And then he sold them as 2D glasses so you could go see 3D movies with your friends.
Oh.
But your glasses made it so that it was just a regular 2D movie. It was amazing.
That's so cool.
Now, lately, I just don't go see 3D movies.
Yeah.
So I don't even know where mine are. But I got quite a few uses out of them. Oh, yeah, I got, like, quite a few uses out of them, and they're, like, pretty scratched now. I probably should have treated them better, but, yeah.
I bet you could find some on, like, eBay.
But, yeah, I wonder if he still sells them, I'm not sure.
At school, Veronica shows Cheryl and Co. The Crawling Eye. She says it'll be playing at the Babylonium for 1 week only. Cheryl seems disinterested, but asks, didn't that come out a few years ago? No, it didn't.
Not according to Letterboxd. Didn't that come out a few years from now?
Ronnie says it's a re-release in 4D, not 3D. She sort of explains what that means and hands out coupons for the buy one, get one free Milk Buds.
Milk Buds, very fun.
I live for the renamed brands.
Honestly, I don't hate Milk Buds. I think they're almost better than Milk Duds.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's a better name, actually. Skit Scat, not better.
Not Skit Scat.
Milk Buds, better.
I like Triple Bubble.
Yeah, Triple Bubble was fun. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wait, maybe... Didn't The Crawling Eye, it was renamed in the US? Maybe.
Yeah.
It came out.
Oh.
Earlier?
That's a good point.
In.
Yeah.
Different countries?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's right.
Maybe. I don't know. That still doesn't explain why they have a copy of it, though.
Yeah. Because
they live in the US.
Yeah. I'm just not sure how Veronica is allowed to do, like, commercials at school. Like, in a classroom, also. You know? Like, I'm like, what class is this?
Maybe it's a free period.
Is this, like, what's happening? Yeah. I don't know.
After everyone leaves, Ronnie coaches Gay Kevin and Clay on how to cover beach balls with paper mache.
I was just like, beach balls? I was like, use regular large balloons. Wasteful. Like, those beach balls, you need those for being beach balls.
That's true.
I don't know. I was just like, you usually just use balloons, and then, like, the fact that they use beach balls, I was just like, I don't know. I don't know. That just felt wrong to me. I was like, that's a thicker plastic.
Were there, like, balloons that size readily available in the 1950s, though?
Maybe not, but I also feel like the sort of, like, texture of the balloon is gonna stop it from sticking to the paper mache, and I don't know if the texture of the beach ball is gonna... You guys, this truly doesn't matter.
Maybe they're cheaper.
It does not matter. The only other thing I had... I need to stop saying the only other thing I had, because it's the last thing I'm gonna say. But I just hope they're getting paid for their extra work.
Oh, you know they're not.
Like, they're putting in a lot of extra hours, and I hope they are.
They're not.
I know, but I hope they are. She's like, oh, I'll pay you, Archie and Reggie.
But not Gay Kevin and Clay.
But Kevin and Clay, volunteering.
Oh. Also, count how many times Ronnie says balls this episode.
Yeah.
She knows what she's doing.
Honestly, I'll take it rather than Flutterbum.
Not Flutterbum. Veronica ambushes Archie and Reggie in the parking lot and invites them to perform at her new 4D experience. Archie starts to say no, but Reggie interrupts them and asks what they'd have to do. She says they'll only have to work for like 2 minutes and she'd pay them.
Yeah.
I love that Reggie and Archie are besties now.
I know. It's so sweet.
Yeah.
Archie's just like, I feel like Archie knows that Reggie doesn't need protecting, but I also feel like Archie is there just in case somebody tries to step to Reggie so he can punch Julian in the face again.
Aww.
Hey, Julian wasn't in this episode too. Never mind, Toot.
Yay!
Toot for sure. A lot of characters I hate weren't in this episode.
The no Uncle Frank didn't sell you by itself?
You'd think, but now there's two people I hate. I thought it was so funny that Reggie was like, yeah, I will do something for you because I like you. And Archie's like, I'm a sheep and I'll do whatever Reggie does. So that's why I'll do it.
It is so funny to me that Archie, like, has no interest in Veronica this season.
Truly, yeah.
She's like, he's like, you kind of make me uncomfortable.
He's like, actually, we're not doing this anymore.
Cheryl arrives at the Cheryl arrives at the Babylonium for the event. Ronnie welcomes her and jokes that it'll be really scary, and they'll have a nurse on duty in case she faints. We pan to Midge wearing a nurse costume, and Cheryl yells at her. She tells Veronica that if the movie disappoints her, she'll just demand another refund.
Okay.
That's not how tickets work. You keep
like, okay, but this time you got to see the film. That's like literally people in the restaurant who are just like, I didn't like the
literally
food. And you're like, well, you ate it all, so you don't get a refund, but I didn't like it. Ugh. Okay, well, you still consumed it, so.
Cheryl and her Karen era.
Yeah, truly. Okay, quit it with the truly, Robin. I always say the same thing over and over again, and then I edit and I'm just like, what are you doing?
No!
Say anything else.
I think that the trulys are endearing.
Okay, wonderful. I also thought that it was so cute that Dilton was there. He's just like selling life insurance policies. That was so cute. And I wish that Cheryl would just let Midge have a nice time.
Yeah.
Please.
It's funny to me that they have that bit going now.
Yeah, it's cute. Oh yeah, that one time when Evelyn was like, we have a problem, and Cheryl was like, Midge, right? Oh no, I think Tony said that.
And then
Tony was like, we have a problem or something.
The scene where she finds her making out with Fangs in the car and she just drags her out.
She just screams. Yeah. It doesn't really feel like you're friends, Cheryl. Maybe just let Midge do what she wants.
They're not friends.
Tony's a better friend to Midge.
Yeah. Cheryl's unimpressed. Everyone is watching the movie, but at the end when the monster shows up, fog pours into the theater and the two monsters pop out and walk through the audience. Everyone goes nuts for it, even Cheryl. Veronica's impressed with herself.
Pretty impressive, like, monster costumes?
Yeah.
If you're trying to tell me that Veronica, like, made those herself, except, like, no, she says she's gonna do the painting and stuff.
Gay Kevin did all of the work.
Yeah, oh, and that's probably true.
Yeah.
Yeah, Veronica's like, I'll do the painting. Can you guys do literally everything else? Thanks, I'm busy. I was surprised that Dilton and Midge aren't in on it. Like,
yeah.
She's like, can you show up and do this? But,
they're just here for a good time.
They still get to be in there. Yeah, which is nice.
Yeah.
But Dilton's not having fun. Everyone's having fun, but Dilton. Dilton's screaming the whole time.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, he's not having a good time. I love Dilton. And also, I was wondering, like, when are we going to bring up Midge's pregnancy again? I know it's gonna come back, but I'm waiting.
I think I saw an episode summary where they bring it up. Or Fangs is, like, working on himself in the summary.
Right. Okay.
I also liked how Midge just, like, jumped on him.
Yeah. Oh, that was cute.
And started kissing him. That was funny.
She thinks that, like, being scared is an aphrodisiac for her.
Yeah. She's really into it.
Yeah.
Ronnie gets to work to see a huge crowd of patrons in line. Gay Kevin tells her that tonight's show is already sold out.
Yay, good for her.
Yay. Veronica expects Reggie and Archie, who were underneath the costumes from earlier, to do it all again for the rest of the week. They say they actually wanted to talk to her about that. They thought this was a one-time favor. Ronnie says she'll give them a raise, but Archie says they can't because they're too busy with basketball practice. Veronica is offended and says that the eyeballs are the real stars and that she'll just make Kevin and Clay do it. Reggie stays behind after Archie leaves and asks if they can do another try at their date. She says she can't tonight because of how busy they are, but to come by tomorrow.
I think it's so funny that she's like trying to do reverse psychology on them, and she's just like, I know you guys are gonna want to do this because it makes you like, I don't know, fancy or something, but I'll just make Clevin and Clay. And they totally call her bluff and they don't even think about it. Like, they're just like, oh, perfect.
They're like, okay, bye.
Great. Thanks so much, Veronica. Yeah, that's great, because we did not want to.
Yeah.
I was like, Veronica, are you dumb? Like, they're literally telling you, making it so clear.
Yeah.
That they don't want to do it. And she's like, well, don't twist my arm, but I'll give you more money.
She does not know how to talk to people.
And they're like, no. Yeah, and then I just feel bad for Reggie. It really feels like Veronica is, like, blowing it. But he's so understanding until the end. So,
I know.
I don't know. I still have hope for them, but ugh.
I think we'll get there. Reggie has been waiting for Veronica at the concession stand downstairs for half an hour. Gay Kevin says it's been a busy day, and she'll probably be downstairs soon.
I'm just sad. I'm mad at Veronica for blowing him off, even though she doesn't mean to. And he doesn't deserve it. He needs to go find somebody who will appreciate him.
Literally. Who would you pair him up with, if not Veronica?
I'm still kind of interested in seeing where Betty Reggie is going, you know? Like,
oh, yeah.
I obviously am like, I prefer Barchi, and I know that that's going to be endgame. But I don't know. I was hoping that they would investigate that a little bit more.
Yeah, I think it would be cute.
Yeah.
The only note I had for this scene was poor Reggie, frowny face.
Yeah.
The Babylonium is making headlines. While on the phone with one of the major studios from earlier, Veronica points this out and asks if he'll reconsider doing business with her. He says yes, definitely, and he's sending her a copy of East of Eden right now.
I thought that you didn't have any.
He lied.
I did like how...
You lie! You are like Papa!
I liked how, like, earlier he was like, can I call you Veronica? As, like, a patronizing way, and so she was like, can I call you Peter? Which was cute.
I love that.
But I thought it was funny. I was like, man, Variety, is this story a more important headline than this one that's also on the newspaper that says Lion Eats Extra on Set of Adventure Pick? Feel like I know which one's more important, but okay.
I think they're equally important.
They're like, this one's about Riverdale.
Exactly.
Okay.
Veronica comes downstairs to an empty lobby. Gay Kevin tells her that Reggie got tired of waiting and left. She sadly looks at the flowers he'd brought for her and left there.
Aw, well, make him more of a priority next time.
I just said in my notes, Veggie is so Back to December by Taylor Swift coded.
Oh, dude, can I tell you something?
Yes.
I am starting a new D&D campaign soon, and so I always, like, send, like, a little survey to my players so that I can, like, learn a little bit more about their characters.
Ooh.
And one of my questions on my thing was, which Taylor Swift song is your character? And it's, like, one of the most important questions I've ever asked. So if anybody wants to know more about people, you need to know what Taylor Swift song they are. In other news, I don't know what Taylor Swift song I am yet, so don't ask me, because I actually don't know. I gotta think about it.
I think I'm This Is Me Trying.
Oh, youch! You good?
I'm good.
You okay?
It's fine.
Okay.
But I think Veggie and Veronica as a couple is Back to December. Because, like, you know the line about...
Giving back to December.
Leaving the flowers behind.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you guys.
That's what made me think of that.
You literally can take any ship and make a playlist of just Taylor Swift songs. She spans... every emotion. She's amazing.
Veronica is Betty by Taylor Swift.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Archie and Betty, it's like Giving Cardigan.
Yeah.
August with Archie. Like, it's that whole trio is like, it's happening.
Exactly. Exactly. I also think Back to December could be a Gladys Alice song.
Mm-hmm. Well, just so you know, I have like a whole bunch of FP and Alice. So Miss Americana and the Heartbreak Prince is about Midnight Club, FP and Alice. And what's the one? Screaming and fighting and kissing in the rain is who I am.
Oh, Haunted!
That's the way I loved you.
Oh, yeah.
But also Haunted.
Haunted is a Gladys Alice song, I think.
And Getaway Car.
Yeah.
Honestly, Cowboy Like Me. Like, you can make a playlist for any ship.
You really can.
Yeah.
Do you think Taylor knows that she's this talented and applies all of her songs to Riverdale characters?
Yeah, I think she does, yeah.
She actually wrote them all for Riverdale.
Miss Americana and the Heartbreak Prince, go and listen to it again and tell me that You Play Stupid Games, You Win Stupid Prizes is not about Griffins and Gargoyles. Like, it literally is.
You're gonna have to remind me of that later, because I need to re-listen to it.
Okay, I will.
Awesome. Ronnie is trying to get back into her apartment, but Smithers approaches her and tells her that the locks have been changed. Her parents called and said that now that she's so successful, she won't need or deserve their financial support. Once she has a new address, Smithers will help her move. She lets him know she already knows where she's staying for now.
Yeah. I grabbed this note, and so did you. I like when we have the same notes. Like,
yes.
It happens at the same time. But, yeah. Like, I mean, spoilers for the Betty storyline, but, you know, she sort of, like, loses her relationship with her mother. And so I thought it was interesting that both characters are losing their relationships with their parents.
Aww.
And are sort of getting kicked out in that way. So I thought that was interesting.
They'll be fine. They'll all work it out, I'd like to believe. So the last scene in the Veronica plot is we see Veronica setting up a spot to sleep on the couch in her office. She looks pretty happy as she stares at the crawling eye poster and gets into bed.
Ugh, but then she's got, like, the creepy eye, the eye costumes in the background. I'm like, no, I could not.
I also said that this parallels the plot in 307 where she sleeps at Le Bon Nuit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in that plot, she decided to move out. I don't think it was because she got kicked out, but I wanted to point that out because she sleeps, like, in the booth.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Great. Okay, you guys, before we go into the Betty storyline, let me talk to you real quick about Patreon. It's a service in which you can donate to some of your favorite creators. Our Patreon, patreon.com/theaficionados. We have several cool tiers that you can join. The $1 level is early access to all the podcasts. $2 is our Discord server where you can watch along mostly live with a couple of us. And the $5 is 10% off at several small businesses, and the $10 level is our Patreon-only podcast. So we'd really appreciate your help over there. If not, check out the small businesses. They're all in the description. And if not any of that, just recommend us to a friend, because that's free.
Yeah.
Yeah. Betty!
Betty! I love this storyline.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's horrible, but also fun.
I love that we get to see Alice. I don't love Dr. Werther's.
No.
I hate that man. I loathe that. What do I call Uncle Frank? The stink bug. I love stink that stink bug. Dr. Werther's tells Betty that he's spoken to Alice, and they agree that Betty should no longer be a vixen, because the cheerleading team is too sexual an environment.
No one saw this coming. She keeps being, like, put in extracurriculars and then being pulled out immediately.
Literally, because she makes everything horny.
Yeah. I no longer relate to her.
Aww.
Teen Betty was my friend, and...
Well, this is
like... She's still my friend, but, like, I just don't... She's not me anymore. Like, I used to sort of see her as...
This is a different Betty.
As me, yeah.
This is, like, the different universe version of her. You can still be Betty in season one.
Yeah.
She argues that high school in general is a very sexual environment. Werther's calls her a nymphomaniac. He asks her what her first sexual memory is, and we flash to young Betty and Archie playing Operation, but she lies. Then he asks, how often does she think about sex? And we flash to her constant fantasies of making out with Archie, Fangs, Veronica, Jughead, and Reggie.
Oh, boy. Okay, so first of all, I loved seeing the Betty font. Like I said earlier, it was great.
Yeah.
And it's funny, she's like, this is just how it is in high school. Everybody's horny. And me and Mother were both like, I think that we both had different experiences in high school than Betty.
I think that's just you, Betty.
But also, like, this makes it so clear to me that I was the weird one. In high school, I thought everyone else was weird, but it was me.
I don't think so.
You know, though, like she's just like, yeah, everyone is sort of like that. And I'm like,
no,
but they were. I don't know.
Say that again.
I was like, I guess they were like that. I just thought they were weird.
Well, I mean, she's not.
But I guess everyone was doing that except for me.
I don't think everyone was doing that.
Yeah.
I think it's just a different experience for everyone.
Yeah.
I said disgusting song choice because I only associate Lollipop with the Black Hood. For anyone who didn't watch the episode, they play Lollipop over her making out with everyone.
I screamed.
Me too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, just, I think I have multiple notes in here that's just like, I wish I wasn't talking to you about this, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I wrote later, like, she needs a different therapist. Like, she needs a therapist. Just, like, not one who works at her school.
Well, Miss Burble.
You know? Because, like, isn't it a conflict of interest? Yeah, well, that's true. But also, I'm just like, isn't it a conflict of interest for, like, a therapist? Someone who's, like, hired, by the family? Not just a school counselor?
Yeah. I guess...
You know, like, it's a conflict of interest that he knows all these other people in her life.
Ew. I guess things were different in the 50s, but that doesn't make it right. Mm-hmm.
So, the thing that really bothered me about this was that they're, like, out here making these kids act this out. You know, and, like, nothing overtly sexual happened or anything, but they, like, called it a sexual memory, and I was like...
Oh!
These kids are, like, six!
Oh, like, the actual children.
The actual children.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, these kids are, like, six. I have done a lot of research on sexual attraction and, like, when, like, what's sort of, not normal, but, like, more common. And, like, what, and, like, so I've done research on it, and most people don't feel sexual attraction until 10. 10 is usually when it starts.
Oh.
And, like, these kids are not 10. Like, I just hate that they made these, like, little kids act this out as, like, a sexual memory.
Yeah, I think.
Ugh, that made me uncomfy.
I totally understand that. They shouldn't have said that, but I think they're using the term sexual pretty loosely, because I don't think she was feeling that. I think she probably just looked at Archie and was like, oh, he could be my boyfriend. Like, what if he was my boyfriend?
Right.
That's how I interpreted it.
Yes, which is relatable to me.
Yeah.
Which is relatable. But it also, like, this moment of him being like, when was your earliest one? Sort of like when we then learn later that he's read, like, he's actively reading Lolita.
That's so,
I'm just like, I don't care to know about any of this.
He's so nasty.
Everyone is the biggest fan of Super Duck. Fangs, when he's taking out with Betty, is in a Super Duck t-shirt. Which I thought was funny.
Aww.
And my next thing was just, please free Bughead. Don't make them kiss anymore. They don't want to.
Literally, it's so uncomfy. Like,
they don't want to.
Lily and Cole hate each other, and that's okay.
Right.
Just let it die.
We do sort of get canon by Betty again, so she's still out here.
Yeah, I love that for her.
That she is interested in Veronica, and we, like, sort of saw that in the previous episodes.
Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty cool.
I love that.
You know, that locker room gets a lot of action, as I always say. Every single episode that locker room's getting action.
It really does. I'm taking this as confirmation that the show is going to end with Betty, Archie, Veronica, like, as a throuple.
Uh-huh.
That's, like, my dream ending for the show.
The thing that I really liked about it is that we're sort of getting confirmation that, like, if they were whatever sexuality in the original timeline, that they are what that sexuality in this timeline as well.
Yeah.
Which, like I said earlier, makes me happy because it also works the other way, because we're getting Ace Jughead.
Right.
And that means that canonically,
he's Ace.
Jughead was Ace, and he has been this whole time.
Aww, I love that for him.
And that makes me so happy.
Yeah, and it also means I love that Alice is gay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that I have a chance.
When Betty walked into that room and, like, saw Dilton doing, like, the volcano thing or whatever, I was like, wait. I thought we were gonna see her make out with Dilton. I really did.
Aww. I mean,
because, like, they danced together at Riverdale Grandstand. We never got to see it, but I was like, but wait. I just thought that would be really funny. I was like, what is the euphemism we're making with this volcano?
Like,
is it ejaculation, Blanche?
It is.
Yeah,
I know. I was like, I didn't want to say it, but
I'm like, this is a lot. Yeah.
I don't know what I'm allowed to say on the CW podcast.
Yeah, but okay. It was, like, a very interesting ending to the fantasy.
Yeah. So, again, this is the same scene. It's very dialogue heavy, mm-hmm. So I kind of split it up.
Yes.
Werther's asks Betty how often she thinks about sex, and we saw all of her fantasies, but again, she lies. She thinks about sex a normal amount.
Totally normal, whatever that means.
Werther's asks what she considers a normal amount, and according to her book, teens think about sex every 7 seconds?
This is not my experience! I'm an Ace person, but wow, that's a lot.
I am not an Ace person, and that is not my experience either. That's a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
But Werther says that that's just for teenage boys, and it's different for girls. She says fine. She thinks about sex all the time. He asks why. Betty says she's just curious about it, and sex should be for pleasure. Werther says, no, sex is only for married people to make babies. Gross. Betty says, no, that's not true, because my dad has porno magazines in his sock drawer, and then we cut to that scene of her finding them, and we see that Hal and Alice sleep in two separate beds.
Insane. Yeah. The fact that we, like, see Betty looking through this, I was just like, Hal's the one who made Betty gay, and I hope that he knows that. That she saw that, and she was like, yeah. You know?
She was like, oh.
Betty's bi because you did that, because she found that.
She is. It's your fault, Hal.
But it's so effective seeing the two separate beds. Like, it's not like Betty's just like, my parents sleep in separate beds, and it turns out they hate each other and they don't sleep together, you know? Like, we just see it and we understand.
Yes.
And it sort of reminds me of, like, that moment in the earlier seasons where Veronica was like, I've never heard my parents say I love you to each other.
True. Mm-hmm.
But I was also, like, an adult in a twin-sized bed.
Oh.
You could not catch me, even if I was just one person. Yeah. Like, my bed is a queen, and same. I'm the only one who sleeps in here with a very small dog. So, I couldn't imagine sleeping in a twin-sized bed.
Neither can I. My dog is the biggest bed hog I've ever met in my life, and I think he would take up the entirety of a twin-sized bed. And he's a dachshund.
Literally. Yeah, literally.
A mini dachshund. So he's little. He's just a little guy.
Yeah, like, I'm just like, get a California king and sleep on opposite sides. A twin?
Or make Hal sleep in the basement.
Yeah, exactly. You get it.
Yeah. I wrote down Alice is a lesbian. Because
I've heard that.
Yeah. They sleep in separate beds. Yeah. This is also the first time we've ever seen her bedroom.
Yeah, which is weird.
Yeah. Werther says that's okay because, again, he's a man and she's a child. Betty says screw that.
Yeah, he's allowed to have porno magazines, but you're not allowed to have porno magazines.
Disgusting. Hal is, not Betty. Oh, I just wanted to say one thing. Yeah, and Werther's. Mm-hmm. Imagine being married to the most beautiful woman you've ever seen in your life and still having those magazines. Like,
right.
Okay.
Well, I think that works with your headcanon, though. Is that it's not that he doesn't want to sleep with her, it's that she won't do it.
Yeah. It's that she doesn't want to sleep with him. Okay.
Yeah.
I see.
Wink.
Yeah. So, yeah, Werther says that he's a man, she's a child. Betty says, screw that, because she probably doesn't want to get married ever, and she wants to make an impact on the world.
And he's literally like, a woman making an impact? No!
He said, absolutely not.
No!
Werther's is so nasty, I literally kept wanting to scream at the screen, do not tell him anything!
Yeah. I mean, like, I had said last episode, I was like, there's something to be said about these actors that have to portray these terrible characters.
Yeah, he's doing great, but...
And I feel like, he's doing a good job, because we're supposed to hate him and think he's gross, and he does a great job.
Yeah. You too, Ryan Robbins.
Yeah, exactly.
So next scene. Alice, my cinnamon apple... comes into Betty's room that night and gives her a stack of wedding dress magazines. Betty is confused as to why, considering she doesn't even have a boyfriend. Alice says that that doesn't matter. She can daydream about it. She then tells her that Betty's wedding day will be the best day of her life.
I feel like, I know that Betty is like sort of suspicious about that, but I would immediately know what happened.
Oh yeah.
Like immediately I would have put that together.
I think she does.
Like he definitely broke confidentiality.
Yeah.
But then she doesn't, like, know for sure until later, I guess, or she doesn't say anything until later.
Right. No, Alice, don't gossip about your daughter with her creepy psychiatrist. You're so sexy. Aha.
My favorite part is the aha at the end of every single one. And you're so right about that.
Yeah.
I'm just like, what about Polly, though?
No, seriously, where is Polly?
She's like, well, I think Betty said something to Ethel about Polly being, like, at college or something.
I think I think she said this was my sister's room, and I was like, she might be at college.
Oh, right, we both were like, maybe that's what's true. Yeah. Right, we don't actually know where she is.
No.
But, like, she's like, your wedding day will be the best day of my life, and I'm like, you have another daughter.
You have a son.
She was brought up. Yeah, right, exactly.
Alice officiated Charles's wedding in the real timeline.
Yeah. Yeah. Was that the best day of your life when two serial killers showed up to your house?
That was the best day of my life, actually. I thought that was funny.
So, like I said earlier, there are some episodes that I just remember very fondly. That episode was number 510. It was called The Pincushion Man.
The Pincushion Man.
I'm pretty sure it was 510. And I absolutely loved that episode of our podcast. You guys should go back and listen to it if you feel like it. Because I think we laughed the entire time. Because it was the first episode where me and Brittany and Sam were all back together after they had been gone in Edmonton for like 2 months, I think.
Oh, wow.
Like we had it recorded apart for a really long time, and then we came back together to do the Pincushion Man, which was like the season, like the mid-season finale.
Oh, right. That was insane.
And yeah, oh, it was just the best podcast. It's like one of my favorite ones that we've ever done.
Aw. And that was the last episode we saw Chicken.
Oh, yeah. And then, oh, yeah, because I had the segment that was like, is Chick dead? Because we never bring it up again. And he was just like stabbed or something, right? Like,
well, I think one of them got shot and one of them got stabbed, but they only said that Charles was okay. They didn't say anything about Chick.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Ugh.
Bring him back. I want him in the 50s timeline.
Wait. Didn't Charles say in the last season that he hadn't spoken with Chick?
I don't remember. That sounds familiar.
Yeah, it was like...
Hold on.
The musical where they have the serial killer convention.
Oh my god, this freaking show. Riverdale Chick. Yeah. Wait, he's on Villains Wiki. Shout out. I'm trying to go to the Archieverse Wiki, though.
He's my favorite villain ever.
You know what? The picture that they have for him on the Archieverse Wiki is a crime. I want season 2 Chick. I don't want to see.
Is it the one with the long hair?
Yeah, from the Pincushion Man. Okay, let's see.
I vibe with it. I love Hart Denton. He has a Y-mariner.
The relationships, appearances, lots of stuff in season 2, stuff in season 3, only one in season 4. And then he was mentioned in season 6 in Blue Collar.
Okay.
I don't remember what they said about him.
I think that Betty asked Charles, if I'm remembering correctly, if he'd talked to Chick. And he was like, no, I haven't talked to him since we got married.
Okay. Oh my god. How did I forget that that we got confirmation that he wasn't dead? It's been a while, you guys.
It has. And also there was a lot going on last season.
Yes, that's true.
Werther's asks Betty what her most vivid sexual dream is.
I'm gonna tell you!
Oh, and she does!
What are you doing?
Oh, Betty. She fills him in on her fantasy. She's in biology class, but she's a teacher tutoring one of her students.
No. No!
Depends on who, depends on her mood who it is, but it's usually Archie! We see her fantasy as she explains it. She kisses him on top of her desk, and then it's revealed that the entire class is in session, and everyone is watching. But she keeps kissing him. Werther's asks Betty if she shares these with anyone, and she says no, just her diary. He writes something down.
Don't say that!
I know! He writes something down, and for the second time, she asks him what he's writing. He says, notes and observations. It's kind of like a diary. And then...
patronizing.
Ugh. Then asks where her urge to be sexualized comes from. She explains it's not just about being seen sexually. It's more about just being seen as a person with autonomy, desire, and self-determination. She goes on to say understanding sex could help her more to understand herself and who she is.
And these are all great points.
Mm.
But he doesn't write that down, does he?
Nope.
Nope.
Betty, I think Betty really has a point here. I think you do understand your sexuality, and it does help you understand yourself better.
Yeah.
But that said, stop telling him things.
Don't tell him that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to see Archie in a teacher. I know it's Betty, but we already did that. I don't want to see that.
Exactly. Like,
I wonder if it's supposed to be a callback, but...
I think yikes. On the writer's part, it's gross, but obviously I'm not blaming Betty for having that fantasy, because obviously that didn't happen in this timeline, and there's no way she would have known about that.
Yeah, it does track, though, that Betty seems to love being watched.
Yeah. She's a freak.
I kept thinking during these fantasies, I was just like, we've got all of the other main characters, where's Cheryl? And then I was like, Cheryl's cousins. A lesbian. Like, why isn't she here? And I was like, oh, they're cousins. Whoopsie.
What about Tony, though? Or Tabitha?
Right. Hello?
There was a point in season 5 where I really wanted Betty and Tabitha to get together. So I think it would have been cool if they showed them.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Yeah. When they sang.
Oh, I remember that.
They sang Walking in Space together and got high on maple mushrooms. And they, like, investigated Jughead's disappearance. It was really cute.
And when Tabitha was, like, her... Or was that Tony? Was, like, her angel, her guardian angel, or whatever.
I think it was, like, the three of them. There were three. Like
Jughead?
No, Betty was her guardian angel in the time travel episode. Was Tabitha's.
Oh, gotcha.
Okay. It was Jughead, Tony, Betty.
Right, okay. Either way, cute.
Yeah. Are we ready for the next scene?
Yes.
Mm. Ugh. Betty comes home to find Ellis having tea with a priest.
Okay.
She introduces him to
Betty. And it's not even the hot priest from Fleabag.
Is there a hot priest on Fleabag?
Yeah, he's played by Andrew Scott, and I love Andrew Scott. I'll watch anything he does.
Aww. She introduces him to Betty and says, this is Reverend Lowe from Riverdale First Reformed Presbyterian Church. Reverend Lowe says that she's grown so much since when she was in the children's choir. Alice explains that he's here to hear Betty's confession. Betty is not into this and asks what she needs to confess, but then spots her diaries on the coffee table and realizes what happens. What's happened? Horrified, she asks Alice if she read them. She says she had to because Werther suggested it. The Reverend is also already very uncomfortable. Betty yells at her mom for invading her privacy.
Right in front of the priest.
Or as she puts it, breaking and entering. She says if she loves talking to Werther so much, then why doesn't she just come to therapy with her? Alice says she doesn't need therapy because she's an adult. Betty leaves and thinks about how Werther's compared his notepad to a diary.
I'm sending you a picture of Andrew Scott as the hot priest.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah.
Okay. Get it, bestie.
I did think it was cute how he said that she used to sing in the children's choir. I thought that was really sweet.
Yeah. Aww.
But, like, if I was Betty, I'd be like, I'm immediately embarrassed about what you've said to me about this man. That he thinks that I need to confess, that he thinks I need an exorcism. Like, I know she was, like, sort of kidding about that, but, like, if I was Betty, I'd be like, this man has known me since I was a child, and I'm really uncomfortable with what you've, like, said to him.
I think he was definitely uncomfy, too. Like, I am not one for religion at all, but that guy looked not into it. He was like, oh, okay.
I did think that, like, you know, Alice reading Betty's diaries was very, like, early seasons.
Yes. Specifically, that scene in 301 where she tells her that she read them because Edgar told her to.
Yeah, exactly. I like that she said they were prescribed to her.
She's insane.
By a doctor. I was like, what? Okay. And she's like, who told you to do that? And she said, I'd rather not say. Okay, I guess I'll just put it together using context clues then.
Literally.
Thanks. And so I also thought there was an Easter egg with her asking her to come with her to therapy because that's what they did in the Burble episode, which was called
In Treatment.
Yes. And I thought it was funny that she said, adults don't need therapy. Oh, okay, if you say so, you're all fixed.
Alice, please go to therapy. You do, in fact, need it. She would have so much to talk about.
Yeah.
Also, no, Alice, don't be a weird, guilt-trippy Christian. You're so sexy, and I'm so religiously traumatized. Ha!
Please.
I also did giggle at this scene because I know Machen is, like, such a big voice in the mental health community.
Yes, yeah.
So, obviously, she's very into therapy, IRL. Mm-hmm. Everyone should listen to a podcast, by the way.
Oh.
Yeah. So, late at night, Betty sneaks into Werther's office and breaks into his desk with a bobby pin.
So fun.
Yes. Presumably looking for his notepad. Instead, she finds a pocket knife from one of the serpents. A slingshot.
Maybe.
Jellybean moment, by the way. Mm-hmm. She's the only character we've ever seen with a slingshot on the show, so it's important to mention.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. Comics and magazines, and most disturbingly, a copy of the book Lolita.
Yeah.
The way I gagged when she found that.
Yeah. I laughed. I literally burst into laughter, actually.
I said, ew!
I was like, of course.
Literally.
I like that we're bringing back Sleuth Betty. I was kind of hoping that Betty and Veronica would do a little sleuth moment together, but that's okay.
That would have been awesome.
And I appreciate that we're finally making her about more than just sex, you know? Like, she's talking about, like, in her sessions, she's, like, talking about the reason why and everything. And, like, it seems like she probably still needs therapy, but, like, she's clearly, like, put a lot of thought into it and everything.
Yeah, definitely.
And now that we're, like, sort of making her a sleuth again, she's just, like, more than that, which I appreciate, because it sort of feels like she's sort of just that right now.
Yeah, and it's kind of getting old. Like, I understand that she's going through something, and there's nothing wrong with that, but it's just, like, episode after episode now.
Yeah. I like seeing her do the bobby pins, and she mentioned Tracy True.
I know!
And in season 4, DuPont was the one who, I mean, under an alias, like, several people wrote the Tracy True books.
Right.
And the Baxter brothers? Yeah, but DuPont, like, wrote some of those, I think, or something like that.
Yeah.
And, like, that's kind of crazy because he's playing Werther's.
Right.
So there's something weird going on there.
I always forget that he's in season 4 because I've only seen season 4, like, twice.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's definitely good at playing a villain.
Yes.
Also, I unfortunately did watch the 1997 movie Lolita because of this app, but more on that later.
Time to go look at your Letterboxd review. Did you write one?
I did not write a review for that one.
Did you not want anyone to know that you did it? You said, I don't want anyone to know.
I was like, actually, I'd like to...
I'm embarrassed.
Erase this from my mind.
I'd like to remain anonymous. Yeah.
I gave it 1 star, though.
Okay, good.
Betty visits Jughead at Pops for advice. We learn that he's been there for 2 days. She asks him what he knows about Lolita. He's shocked that she has a copy and tells her that it's considered salacious. It's about a quote-unquote relationship between an adult man and a 12-year-old girl. Betty says it sounds like it's for perverts, and Jug replies that passing moral judgment on a work of art is a slippery slope, and asks if she knows better yet. Betty says she's about to and then leaves.
I think it's interesting that, well, first of all, Hot Dog is hungry.
Literally, go feed him.
So someone go home and feed him. But that, like, this, it came out this year in 1955. So,
yeah, the book did, yeah.
It's interesting that, like, Jughead has either already read it or, like, just knows a lot about it.
I don't think he's read it. I think he's probably read, like, the reviews. Because he does say that, like, a parent's guide review place, like, calls it salacious.
Gotcha. Yeah.
I also think there's just such an interesting conversation to be had about whether or not a piece of media like this should be considered art or not. I personally found it disgusting, but after I watched it, I read a couple of reviews, and there are obviously going to be people who enjoy it for gross, despicable reasons, but I did find one person who was also an SA survivor, and they found a lot of comfort in Dolores's character. So while I'm glad that there are people comforted by stories like this being told, what worries me is, like, how, at least in the movie, it was written. It's, like, from the paw of the predator. I'm framing it as, like, a love story. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
I haven't seen the movie. I guess, I don't know if it was if it needed to be a movie.
Oh, it definitely didn't. There are two movies, actually. Know? There's one from the 60s, and there's one in the 90s.
I really feel like that could have stayed a novel.
I feel like it should not have been published, maybe.
Yeah.
Like, if, I don't know, if he needed to get that out of his system, like, rewrite that book okay, whatever, fine. But why did he have to publish it? Like, why did he have to put that into, like, the mainstream, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's, like, you know, passing moral judgment on a work of art is a slippery slope.
Agreed, yeah.
I guess that's true, because sometimes, like, people are putting art like that out there as comfort to themselves and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It is a slippery slope. He's right. Like, I'm not sure what is the correct thing to say about it. I don't think there is a correct thing to say.
I don't think there is either.
Or a correct opinion to have about it. But when it's, like, stuff like this, it's just, like, it's hard to think that this needed to be out there.
Exactly.
Like, what's the moral, what did we learn from it that made the world better than it was before, you know?
Yeah, I feel like it's done more harm than good. At least from what I've heard, so.
Yeah. So here, Jug tells us, but this is what was on Wikipedia for it. So Lolita is a 1955 novel written by Russian-American novelist Vladimir Nabokov. The novel is notable for its controversial subject. The protagonist, an unreliable narrator, a middle-aged literature professor under the pseudonym Humbert Humbert, is obsessed with a 12-year-old girl, Dolores Hayes, whom he kidnaps and sexually abuses after becoming her stepfather. Lolita, the Spanish nickname for Dolores, is what he calls her privately. The novel was originally written in English and first published in Paris in 1955 by Olympia Press. So this is interesting to me because it's like about a professor, and I guess that like sort of goes into like Betty's weird dream or whatever that is because she's a teacher, but like he's also a teacher.
Yeah, that's how I took it. I thought it was more about others.
And also he was the one who was like, I'll teach sex ed, and I'm like, oh,
ew.
Gross.
Oh
yeah, not good.
He's so
yeah.
So the next scene, Betty reads Lolita under her covers in the middle of the night.
Classic Betty.
I didn't have any notes about that scene.
Been seen her. Like, we've seen her do that before, so it's consistent.
I was scared that she wasn't going to give the book back, though. And I was like, why would you keep doing this? Alice is going to find that.
Don't keep it. Keep stealing books, yeah.
Betty's walking down the hallway when Werther's reminds her about their after-school session. Betty says she can't go today because she has some interesting reading to finish up. But don't worry, tomorrow they'll have plenty to talk about.
Amazing.
Get his ass, Betty.
I was like, I love that she was like, I'm not done the book yet. I don't have all of the information yet, so I can't fully drag you until then.
She's so real.
So I'll let you know tomorrow. That reminds me of, like, when Tony was like, here, Cheryl, read this book. And I was like, I hope she finished it beforehand. Like, you need to have all the information before you recommend a book to somebody. And so Betty's just like, I can't drag you for this book until I have all the information. And I respect that.
Yeah, she gets it.
Yeah.
So Betty storms into Werther's office the next day with the copy of Lolita. Werther's is upset at her for breaking into his office and is unashamed about owning the book. He says it was helping him understand Betty, since Lolita herself is quote-unquote sex-crazed. Betty is disgusted that this is his takeaway and argues that no, she was being manipulated, and adds that he's even creepier than Humbert himself. It's inappropriate for him to be asking her all these sexual questions. He's reading this for pleasure over research, and she's no longer comfortable being alone with him. Werther's doesn't even know what to say, and Betty walks out.
Hell yeah.
Yes.
It was great.
It was.
Yeah, like, he's literally just like, he's like, well, I'm learning it, I'm reading it to learn about you. And I'm like, did Betty say she was into teachers? No, she was the teacher.
Ugh.
And it makes total sense that he thought that the girl was, like, the instigator. He thought Dolores was the one who, like, wanted to sleep with her stepdad? I don't think so.
Well, okay, so I'm disgusted but not surprised that Werther's found her as a character sex-crazed, but, like, the way the story is told, which was what made it, like, so problematic to me, is that they try to make it seem like she's the one coming on to Humbert, and therefore that she's at fault, and that's really gross.
Yeah, that makes sense, because it seems like, because it says on Wikipedia that's an unreliable narrator.
Yeah.
So it's like, he wrote it to seem like that.
Right.
Yeah.
It's really gross, but again, I'm not surprised that Werther's took that bait, and also, thank God that Betty doesn't have to deal with this anymore, because she's right. The questions he was asking were just so inappropriate, and I think if the Alice from our timeline found out about this, she would literally be horrified.
Yeah, yeah. Also, Betty's wearing her embroidered shirt again.
I know, it's so cute.
I kind of want one. I'm like, should I embroider my shirts? I know keep saying that, but like, should I?
Yeah.
Kind of want to.
I feel like I just wear mostly t-shirts, so it wouldn't really look good. Alice is mad because Werther's called her and told her what happened. He wants to end his sessions with Betty, but Alice is intent on helping her fix whatever is wrong with her. Betty tells her that there's nothing wrong with her. Alice goes to call him back, but she yells at her, saying if she really wants to help, then quit it with the Werther stuff and just talk to her. She says fine, and Betty tells her how unhappy she can tell she is. Alice is shocked and denies it, but Betty keeps pushing, asking what happened between them. Why does it seem like she's afraid of her? Alice starts tearing up, and it seems like she's finally gotten through to her, but then Hal barges in from downstairs.
Ugh.
He's angry and refuses to leave them alone and yells at Betty for putting Alice through so much when all she's done is sacrifice for her.
Hard to watch.
I am so mad. So what do you think he meant by sacrifice?
I think it's funny that you wrote in your notes, FP, Charles. I also wrote Charles, FP.
I also wrote being gay, FP, Charles.
Yeah. I think that, like, the main sacrifice that I can think of that would make sense would be Charles, genuinely. Yeah,
absolutely.
Like, hello? It's possible that Hal was just like, let me just say a thing to make you feel bad, but, like, I really hope it's true and that
I know
something's happening, you know?
I think that would make the most sense, and especially because she'd mentioned that the sisters weren't as bad as people said they were earlier.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I did like the moment where she was like, Dr. Werther says he doesn't want to hang out with you anymore. And she's like, great, fab. I also don't want to hang out with him. That's actually perfect.
She was like, awesome.
That's great. And then Alice, you can like see in her face that she's like, ack, my daughter is seeing me too clearly.
I think Majin did so well during that scene. Like, she always does. But, like, the moment you see the wall come down and she starts to try and open up, oh, it's just so heart-wrenching.
Yeah. Yeah, Majin and Lily both were so good in this scene. And, like, she almost got to her. And then Hal says some dumbass stuff off screen.
What do you think he said to her?
I don't know. It's, like, some brainwashing crap, though.
Ugh.
What do you think?
I have no idea. Like,
don't even know.
I'm curious about whether or not it is, like, brainwashing or if he's threatening her or... I don't even know. Like, is he a serial killer in this timeline? I need more information about the Coopers.
Right, yeah. Because, like, the thing is, she's like, why does it seem like you're scared of me? And I'm like, do you think I have serial killer genes or something?
Well, that was, like, a whole thing in our timeline. Like, there...
Yeah.
I think it was either the farm or the therapy episode where, like, there was a whole plot point where Alice was saying that she's scared of Betty and it was the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm so frustrated that we didn't get to see whatever Hal said to her, though.
Yeah.
Ugh. For, like, a literal second, we got to see our Alice back again and not, like, the bad guy in Betty's storyline. And then in the next scene, she's just back to being like that.
Ugh.
I'm so sad. So, Betty comes down for breakfast the next morning and tells Alice she wants to figure something out between them, but not Dr. Werther's. Alice agrees and says she called him this morning to fire him. She says that everything she's ever done was for Betty, but she obviously doesn't want that, and she doesn't want or need her mom anymore. Betty is obviously confused, and Alice tells her that she's no longer her mother and walks out.
So what does that mean? You know, like, is she kicking her out, or is she just, like, gonna ignore her now? Like,
I think she's just, like...
not gonna try and force her into stuff anymore? Because if I was Betty, I'd be like, cool?
Yeah. I think she's just, like, emotionally removing herself from...
Yeah.
I don't know. Have you watched Yellow Jackets?
No, not yet. I've been so busy.
Oh, okay. So there's this...
But I know so much about it.
I see. So there's this one character... Oh, this is so spoilery. Spoilers for Yellow Jackets, I guess. There's this one character who has a daughter, and it's Donna from Riverdale. Is the daughter.
Yes, I know that she's on. Yeah. I noticed that she was on there.
So her mom...
I was like, is that why she's not coming back?
Yes, that's literally why. She's got all that Yellow Jackets money.
Come on, I want to see Donna.
So yeah, her mom is, like, not very close with her, and we learn that it's because she had a baby in the wilderness when they crashed on their plane, and the baby died, and she's like, I just can't connect with her because I'm scared that she'll leave too. And I think this, Shauna is so Alice-coded. Like, it's crazy, guys. I could write an entire River Mom AU about this show.
I would read it.
Thank you.
I'll watch Yellow Jackets and then I'll read it. It'd be great.
Amazing.
I thought that she was gonna, I mean, I've been thinking it for the past couple episodes, but I thought that Alice was finally gonna actually send Betty to the sisters here.
So did I. I was so scared for a minute.
And yeah, it's just hard because, like, you could see it in her face that she was, like, finally, there was a breakthrough there before Hal showed up, which sucks. This is why, in the original timeline, he's dead.
Exactly. And the line where she's like, make your own breakfast, that cut like a knife. I was like, yeah. Ugh. It made me so sad.
Not a badass MILF today. Sorry.
Well.
No.
No, Alice, don't be so emotionally immature. You're so sexy. Aha. Aha. The scene really did hurt my feelings, though.
Yeah. And then we see that Jughead scene that yes. sets up for next episode.
But that's it.
Yeah. Shall we segment?
Yes, let's segment.
All right. Hey, what did Blanche think?
I did not have a voicemail to send in this episode, but I did text Robin before she asked me to cover this up, and I asked if I could piggyback off your segment, and yeah. I would like to give a hug to Alice.
Yeah, which character needs a hug the most? Blanche says Alice.
It is Alice.
I'm...
But also Jughead.
I also want to give one to Jughead, I think. And honestly, kind of Betty.
Yeah.
I think Betty needs one, too.
How about Hot Dog, too?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd love to give a hug to Hot Dog. Brittany's segment is which MILF is the most badass? No award...
Alice.
No,
it's Alice, today. Right?
No.
Why not?
She's so bad. She was bad today. She in trouble.
No, I could fix her.
No, Alice, don't be a badass MILF.
You're so sexy.
Uh-huh. Yeah. What is Sam shipping the most? I don't think Sam has seen the episode yet, but I texted her to ask her if I could say that it was Veronica, because Betty clearly fantasizes about her aww. Twice. And Sam was like, yes, of course. So
yes.
Sam is shipping Veronica the most this episode.
Me too.
Asexual Jughead ? Yeah.
Aw.
Hell yeah.
Yes, always yes.
And now it's time for our best line award. My best line award goes to Veronica and Dilton for...
A new fourth dimension of terror.
Time is the fourth dimension. Do you mean time?
Shut up, Dilton.
He just likes to give fun facts, okay? Be nice to him.
Aw. And my favorite line award goes to Veronica for...
I'll get Kevin and Clay to do the gag. You can leave your balls with them.
Just so good.
She knows exactly what she's doing.
And they're both like, great, thanks, yeah. And then Brittany's favorite line award goes to Betty and Alice for...
Why don't you come to therapy with me? It might help you. I am an adult woman. I don't need therapy.
I almost chose that one.
Oh, okay. Yeah. As for one of the best trailers the show has ever put out, the blurb for the episode says, The Mystery of Brad Rayberry. Jughead and Tabitha team up to investigate a mystery involving Brad Rayberry. Cheryl asks Tony if she can attend an after-school book club with her and other black students. Betty and Veronica ask Archie and Reggie out on a double date, and Fangs prepares for his first big gig. That'll be fun.
Oh, so that's the Fangs one.
Yeah.
Fun.
So Jughead says to Tabitha, why would Mr. Rayberry take his own life? And Tabitha says, unless he didn't. So we see Jughead with Tabitha looking at a picture of a woman, and it says June 1948 on the back. We see a bunch of cops at Pops, which rhymes.
Cops at Pops.
And we see cops at Pops. Jughead is at the station with Keller, and he's showing him, like, sort of the file that they have. And Keller says, how well did you really know your so-called hero, Jughead? And we see that inside there's, like, stuff about the Communist Party and stuff like that, so maybe Mr. Rayberry was not the best type of human person.
Oh boy.
Jughead says, this is impossible. Then we see the milkman walking down the hall, creepily. Jughead says, someone else is responsible. Then we see the milkman, who's creepy as hell, at Mr. Rayberry's door. So maybe a flashback, or he's showing back up. Like, I wonder if it's like, either a flashback before he killed Rayberry, he's about to kill Rayberry, or Jughead and Tabitha are in Rayberry's house and we see the milkman walking up.
Ooh, I don't like that.
Right?
But how would...
Also, his name tag says Melvin.
Melvin!
Yeah.
How would he know that Tabitha and Jughead are, like, investigating this?
I don't know. Maybe he's just paying attention. Or, I don't know, something creepy.
Scary.
Maybe he's just, like, some guy named Melvin and everyone only knows he's the serial killer when he has the uniform on. I don't know. All right, you guys. Thank you so much for listening to this episode.
Our music is Terminal by Good News Tunes.
It sure is. Thank you to those who shared space with us while we recorded this podcast. For me, it was my dog.
For me, it was the two little baby dogs I'm babysitting.
Wonderful.
They were so good.
Thank you to you, Blanche, for writing our notes. You're the best.
To me, of course. Anytime.
Oh, I guess that was your line, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Hey, well, you can't really thank yourself. Okay, moving on.
I wrote, thank you to me.
With emojis. If you're a fan of The 100, we'd like to talk about that show too. We did seasons 4 to 7 as they were airing, and then we're going back to the good old days. We did season 3, and now we're on season 2. We're on hiatus right now because of Riverdale, but hopefully we'll get back to it soon.
If you're a fan of Stranger Things, they like to talk about that show too.
Mm-hmm, it's true. We did seasons 1 to 3, and now we're going through long form for season 4, which will be very fun.
Exciting.
If you're a fan of Lost, we'd like to talk about that show too. We're on season 4. It's our longest podcast. We have a spoiler section at the end if you want to watch along for the first time. And we have guests over there. So that podcast is my baby, and I'd really appreciate it if you listen to it.
It's amazing.
The next episode that's coming out is The Constant, which is known pretty universally as the best episode of Lost. And it's a highly anticipated episode, and I'm really excited to hear everybody's thoughts on our thoughts.
Ooh, I haven't listened to the Patreon re-release yet.
It just came out.
I know. I'm excited, though. You can follow the Aficionados on Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram, and our new TikTok.
Please. Our Patreon, like I said earlier, is patreon.com/theaficionados. If you like what we do here, please consider donating. I'd really appreciate that. It's expensive with our money, and it's also expensive with our time, so we'd really appreciate your help. If not, like I said, check out our small businesses. They're all in the description. Or just recommend us to a friend, because that's free.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You can follow me at BlanketJuice on Instagram, or if you want to track what I'm watching, I'm at SerpentLady on both TV Time and Letterboxd. And also that new app you guys were talking about on Oakley. What's that one called?
Serialized.
Yes, I'm on Serialized as SerpentLady now too.
You guys should follow me on Serialized, but don't look at what I've been watching lately, because I accidentally watched 9 episodes of Catfish in a row.
I saw that. I was like, is she good?
It's like a good thing to put on in the background while I'm editing. Like, it's not something that I super have to pay attention to, but it's like drama and it's fun. So, I've watched a lot of episodes of Catfish. Anyway, you can follow me personally at Robin E. Jeffrey. That's RobynEJFFREY pretty much everywhere, including on Serialized. But like I said, don't look at all the episodes of Catfish I watched.
I like when you write reviews.
Thanks. Yeah, it's like I usually write reviews. I don't even rate, because that feels like a lot.
Yeah.
For some reason. But I'll almost always write a review, except then I got to the point where I was watching just a million episodes of Catfish, and I was like, I'm not sure what to say. I didn't honestly really pay that much attention. Do you just go, yep, that Catfish was bad every episode?
I wrote a review of this episode, so you guys should check that out.
Oh, yes. Next episode is episode 710. It's called American Graffiti, which is a 1973 American coming-of-age comedy drama film directed by George Lucas and produced by Francis Ford Coppola. It is set in Modesto, California in 1962, and it's a study of the cruising and early rock and roll cultures popular among Lucas's age group at the time. Through a series of vignettes, it tells the story of a group of teenagers and their adventures over the course of one night. I have seen this film. I watched it in film school. I don't remember a whole lot about it, but I do remember enjoying it just fine.
Oh, what is it called?
I thought it was pretty good. American Graffiti.
Oh, I've actually never seen that, but isn't there a Riverdale episode in that game?
Yes, this next one.
Oh. I'm thinking of American Dreams. My head is in season 3. Yeah.
That was good. All right, you guys. See you next episode. Okay, love you. Bye.
Okay, love you. Bye.
So funny.
Oops.